So our officers this year, obviously I'm the president this year, 2015. Vice President Bruce Johnson. Mic isn't working? Is that a little better? Okay. Roll call of officers. President is here, Julie Lopez. Vice President Bruce Johnson. Treasurer Sal Duran. Secretary Dwayne. Where's Dwayne? And our information officer, Jim. So for the president's report, there's not that much to report at this time until after the conference. But like I said, we had 31 counties attending this year and 57 members, plus someone from Marin County. And it was a good turnout. I've looked over the history of the numbers, and Sacramento County always gets the most. So do we want to think about more co-hosting and having a central location? That way we get more member turnout. And isn't that what we're all about? So I just want everyone to consider that and think about if you could co-host, but in a different location that more people could come to. Something to think about if you ever want to volunteer for this job. So we'll go straight to the treasurer's report. Sal, do you have a treasurer's report?
Okay, so I'll make it pretty brief. We have a balance forwarded to us from last year of $9,490. And income, registration, and a few other things, we got a total of $19,639. We had expenses, miscellaneous and hotel expenses together came out to $10,181.03. So the remaining balance currently as of today is $9,455.97. So we did pretty good. We only spent so far $34 less than what we got. So we think we're in pretty good shape. Of course, we're not done yet. There's a few extra odds and ends that are coming in. And I'll be putting this report, giving it for so everybody else can have a copy of it later. Okay? That's it.
The treasurer has a two-year term, and Sal's going to go ahead, and he's volunteered to take on a second year. And we found it that would be most simple if he would do that. Okay. So thank you, Sal, for volunteering to be the treasurer again next year. Do we have to vote? He's a two-year term.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. And then that comes to secretary. That's also a two-year term. Dwayne, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Not too much. We were talking about a little bit on some of our education and so getting started. We thought we would at least try to kind of put an outline out there, like one of the questions is, has anybody gone to the Title Transfer Association for the assessors has a week-long class? I think it's a really good class. I've seen the outline for it, so if I haven't gone, but it covers a lot of the things that we're interested in. There's always the problem of a week class, but if they're sending Title Transfer, it would be nice if they could send at least maybe one map or something along with it each year. I think that's an excellent avenue for people. We're going to kind of put an outline on that kind of a suggestion. Another one is, of course, initial appraisal training classes, if anybody can go to those and get their assessor to let them map or go to that. I think those are also a good training class. I think in the future, if there's also a few right-of-way classes. Right-of-way association is something for right-of-way agents. They really branched out and covering a lot of different things. We basically have all our members take a real estate class. So at least the real estate principal class through Bearden College. And so that's another avenue, I think, for getting started. And I think we're going to try, one of the things I'm going to try to do this year is see if I can't get at least a title transfer workbook and some stuff like that and get it up on the website. So maybe we can at least kind of start there in terms of a getting a free class. I don't know. The copyright stuff becomes a possible issue, but we'll see whether we can get some kind of a classes going for some of this kind of stuff. We'll see about the possibility. I know some of you that's kind of done some of the training kind of a thing for sort of like lynda.com, and like when you're clicking and I think it wouldn't maybe be too hard, like such as if we had videotape our the excellent pro class we had just on legal descriptions. I think if we could have got that and videotaped it, I think it would have been a good thing to have for people who have been able to look at, at their desks. So I think those are a couple of things that we're looking at in the really near future to try to get started, and hopefully we'll work out.
So, Dwayne, I know my assessor has asked me what's happening with the certification committee. So you kind of touched on it, but is that official? We really have to give a report to our assessors pretty soon for the certification committee. They're looking at it, and they're kind of thinking that we're not making progress over the years.
I'd say we're not making progress over the years.
Let me add something to that. I know we years ago we were talking about the notes here. We haven't really had a whole lot of reporting on the last during the last several conferences. And I know that when we had a problem when the bottom fell out of the housing market and we're trying to get certified, but yet we're still trying to keep our jobs too at that point. And I think that's where maybe it started to kind of taper off a little bit, where we stopped looking at our certification. So it's and it's good that the Assessors Association is starting to look at going, hey, what's going on with this thing? So
okay, so can we get a report from the certification committee for next year?
Yes.
Okay. Right. And who's the certification committee? Dwayne, Brett, Emilio, Sal. Okay. All right, so that's, we'll look forward to that next year.
As far as training is concerned, is anyone taking advantage of the CASA classes?
Yes, if you're fine.
We're talking about the CASA classes.
I think the title transfer, I think, through
well,
that.
The CASA on the, there's a class yesterday on leases, there's a class November 4th on joint tenancy, November 19th on, I left it in the car, but I print out a list for my staff, and we send our mappers to those classes.
And some of those classes are all WebEx classes too.
Absolutely. So. That's what we've been taking advantage of. And I just attended the CASA roundtable, and in just since 2013, it's increased to about 2,900 people that have logged on to the WebEx, through the WebEx. And the certification for CASA was approved and is going forward. And there's supposed to be, it's going to be implemented in about 4 years because of the process that has to go through to get the classes up and running for the certification, how they're going to monitor and track everyone who is then certified. as for the ownership.
Thank you for volunteering to be an associate with our
educational
committee. We'll be talking to you. we'll try to get a lot more information of that, what she was just saying, and get that up on the website as well, so people will know where to go and where to look.
And there's quite a few classes that you can log into BOE and learn about the ownership, about appraisal. All of the classes that they take are online through BOE, the BOE website. So I encourage everybody. Knowledge is power, and the ownership isn't getting any easier. So
perfect. Any more suggestions?
Which kind of brings us to our next topic, is that the website. I really like to, and Quayne agrees, and some others agree, that we'd really like to use the website as more of a library, maybe a database, saving things that come up in the email forums, maybe get away from using an email forum and go towards a bulletin board type thing. Jim, I know you have a lot to say about the website. Could you summarize where we stand and maybe tell everybody what the plans are for the next year or so? Did you want to report what we talked about at the offices?
Well, I was explaining at the meeting earlier that when I first signed up for this web hosting service, it was 12 years ago when I started doing this, and I ordered a Windows account because I thought I was going to try to learn ASP.NET, you know, go into the .NET end of things. Well, that never happened. So just maybe earlier this year, I'll say, when the renewal came up, I actually went into the control panel and saw something that I hadn't been noticing before, and that was we were already exceeding our disk capacity on the web host. And there's not a whole lot on there. I mean, there's maybe a gigabyte on there, but apparently we were exceeding what we were allotted. So I looked around at their marketing materials and found out, oh, well, they have this other plan. I can just switch to that. It's a Linux plan, which is not Windows, but apparently Linux is way more popular. It's probably quicker. I don't know. It has different benefits to it, put it that way. And one of those benefits is a little bit cheaper. So this comes with several features that we didn't have before. One of the features is an actual email mailing list, whereas what we're using now isn't really a mailing list, it's a forward. It's just a list of forwards. So that's why you guys have to send me a request to sign somebody up or to remove somebody. So I physically have to go in there and maintain the list of subscribers. And I'll be honest with you, keeping track of them sometimes has been a chore. Or keeping them in there accurately also has been a chore, because I also try to keep a separate list of who's in there and what their people's actual names are, you know. But keeping these things synchronized is just, I can't believe how hard it is. So one of the other features is I believe you can go in there and do what they call a one-click setup and set up one of these things she speaks of, the bulletin board type forum. Now, I know one of the reasons we went with the email forum to begin with was because it's more of a passive type system, meaning people don't have to do anything or participate in order to benefit from it. You just get an email, and there's your you can read it, you can respond to it if you want to, or whatever. Whereas a bulletin board is something, if you want to know what's going on, you have to go actively log in and see. So I don't know if that's something we're interested in. The officers seem to think so. We didn't really discuss why the bulletin board system as opposed to the email system.
Bruce, did you have any comments as to...
I guess the only particular advantage I could think of for the bulletin board is that everything gets saved so that you can go back in time and look at what was...
And I see an advantage to that.
What was in there.
I know sometimes when an issue comes up, that was on the CCMA at one point, and to go back through those emails is really difficult. Charmaine?
For some bulletin boards, there's ways to get notifications. So you can get notified to an email. So if somebody posts to a bulletin board, it might be possible to send out emails to say, you know, so-and-so posted about this topic. So it's still passive.
And I did point that out in the meeting, but the user would have to go in and set up an account first off. And then if that's a feature in the bulletin board system, you would have to find that setting and tell it what email address you want to be sent to. So it's less passive. You guys would have to be the ones that go in there and operate it and be a part of it if you want to. Whereas the emails just come mysteriously.
I think one of the things we were hoping to get, and we hadn't really followed up to see if it was how to kind of do it, but the idea is that each county would be able to go in and edit their members, new members, lost members, promotions, stuff like that. And I think that's maybe the biggest thing we're trying to move forward on.
Well, I don't think it's going to work like on a county level. It's just a user type deal. It's an individual basis type system.
I think that brings up the point that we need more users besides just Jim. So I know Bruce has volunteered to do some work, and I'll gladly be a user too. We can't put all of this on Jim if we want.
Part of the problem is all these little features and things take time to go in and set up. And unfortunately, I've been just really swamped ever since I became supervisor. And we're down one staff member in our mapping section. So I'm the first to admit that, you know, I get small pockets of time here and there. And that's usually when I go in and update things like the directory. Or I may post a job announcement or, you know, things like that. The job announcement thing seems to be pretty popular. I don't know if it's been of any fruition. I don't know if any of these counties posting jobs are actually getting responses from the other counties for interviews or whatever, applications. That kind of statistics I don't have. But people sure like to post them.
I like that. I think we all agree that we could use the website more. I'm real big on data, and as president this year, it became clear that over the years, everyone has had their own format for putting in the data, and you get these emails with files attachments from all past presidents or the past vice presidents or treasurer, and everybody's in a different format as to what the attendance was, how many members, the hotel night stays, the costs and everything. And it would be better if everything were in the same format. And I also, you know, I'm big on maps, of course, and so I like seeing a map with where our attendance is and who's coming and who's not. So I would like to use the website for things like this. Jim said that maybe we have space issues for a big database.
There could be.
But we could check that out.
At this point, with the new web hosting account, we're fine. As far as space goes, we probably got a long ways to go before we hit any ceilings on that. And then if we do hit a ceiling, it may just be a matter of paying an extra $20 a year or something for 5 or 10 more gigabytes. Now there's another issue of the website that I've been thinking a lot about lately, and that is just redesigning the site. I think it's due for a total redesign in more ways than one. I was originally just thinking about spoofing it up for the way it looks and feels, but the more I got to thinking about it, right now there's particular sections in there that at one time we thought we were going to use it that way. Well, now after 12 years, it's not being used that way. The one thing that has been being used is the conference section, obviously, because that's kind of one of our primary focuses of the group. But there's still a lot of material that has yet to be posted. Okay, there's still a lot of material, and that takes a while too, because you have to prepare the material. If it's stuff that's been like in a Word format, I've been converting it to PDF, that sort of thing. So it takes time to do these things. There's also a section on there called counties, where many moons ago we said, well, if you have things you'd like to post that are specific to your county, like scanned copies of your assessor maps, I know that's seemed to be a thing in the past, is everybody wanted to see everybody else's maps, what they look like. Or if you had like little programming routines that you use in AutoCAD or something else, you could post those up there. I think Santa Barbara has a few, we have a few, but that's about it. We have a few photos posted. But by and large, there's still only this many counties that have actually sent me things to post. So I just don't feel like that's being utilized, and I'm just thinking about taking that whole section down. And then we were talking in the past day or so about this. I think this group tends to prefer information in a different way. So that instead of just going out and browsing through different counties, for instance, people might want to just go to some kind of library where there's one of the popular things in this group has been questionnaires or surveys, and then just basically compiled results of these surveys.
And that brings up my next question too. Would we want these surveys and questionnaires out there on the public on calmapping.org? I'm not sure that we would.
Yeah, and there again, here we go. There are ways of setting up a secured area of the website, but that's a technology that I'm not familiar with yet. It may involve programming in something like PHP, but I'm not sure. Or it may just be a secured folder on the web server. That's something I just haven't looked into either.
So it looks like Bruce and I are going to try and help Jim out this year. I know a little bit of PHP, only one class, but we'll try and get going with that and make the website more useful for people. Does anyone else want to volunteer? Is anyone else real tech savvy with websites?
Oh, not really tech savvy.
You think you could be helpful?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
And when I say PHP, when I say PHP, it's not just PHP that you have to know. Anytime you're dealing with web technologies, there's this basket of technologies that you have to know at least some of, like HTML, obviously, CSS, definitely. If you want to know PHP, that's fine, but you're going to also use JavaScript. So I'd say HTML, CSS, PHP, and JavaScript. And then if you want to get into databases, there's MySQL.
Okay. I can help out a lot with a lot of those things.
So when you want to learn web stuff, you have to learn this kind of a basket full of technologies.
Right, but we should also have so much integrated with what we're already paying for if we have a web host.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but with our foundation is there. This web account can probably handle anything we throw at it.
Right, right. So,
but,
so let's give it a try. Let's go for it. Okay, did anyone else have any other business that they wanted to bring up? We don't have any elections that we have to do. I think we've covered all the business. Any questions? Anyone? Yes.
Jim, who's hosting the, who do you have as the host, the web host for this?
The web host is a company called Superb Internet. They used to be out of Vancouver, Canada, but I think they moved their headquarters to Honolulu. Can't imagine why.
Where is the service?
You can surf the web better.
Indeed.
Okay. Do we want to have any open discussions for about 5 minutes? Anything else to talk about? Public acquisitions, BLAs. We're going to talk about TRAs later.
We got a question. I just wanted to see like a show of hands of people that in our county we stopped tracking a long time ago, even though we get a lot of questions on easements. And I just wondered if there's any other counties that have ceased tracking easements.
Is there any other county that has ceased tracking easements?
The question should be, does any other county track easements?
Okay.
Does any other county track easements?
Well,
Mona?
We do from subdivision maps.
Okay, from subdivision maps? Okay, is that utility easements, walkways, all of it?
No walkways, utilities, ingress and egress.
Does that include mining claims?
We don't
have. Mineral rights?
Don't have that. Just whatever on the subdivision map.
So you don't track mineral rights?
We don't. We never have.
Oh, okay. We do.
We do. We don't have. In Santa Cruz, we don't really have minerals to track.
I mean, we track mineral rights, but the appraisers keep a. They send us, and they say, here's, you know, we think, or there is in this mineral lease a description of a oil contract area, and we map that and put a parcel number on it. So we track mineral rights in that respect.
How do you show that on your
assessor's
map?
We don't. We have a separate layer. It's like its own base map. It's of mineral rights.
Yeah, we show our mineral rights with a hashed pattern around the boundary.
Oh, in terms of on the map, we draw. You know, the old thing used to be. You know, you put whether there's mineral rights have gone away or not by putting the MR / on those parcels.
It's in the assessor's handbook too, yeah. Section 215. Yeah.
We stopped doing it. I think that, like I said, we find that, you know, people are looking, and especially if they're looking online, you know, they can look at our mineral layer over the base map so easily that it tells them everything they really need to know, and we don't need to put it on the assessor map anymore. Well, yeah. What I'm being reminded of is that we have as well as having it as a layer, we do keep we make assessor maps of those mineral rights, and so they are on people's pages as well.
I'm getting back to the easement question. Did we answer your question about the easements?
Yes, I just wondered because it seems like easements don't really have anything to do with the roll value.
No, they don't. So that's our position. Yeah. And it takes a lot to research an easement. And we tell people just go to the recorder's office or do a title search. Jim?
We don't keep track of private easements. We mainly keep track of like public access or drainage or something similar that may significantly impact the owner's use of that land, because that may be something that the appraiser might want to see.
We're getting a lot of nowadays, used to do offer of dedication, mm-hmm. Now they have offered dedication easements. So that's just kind of a new terminology that it was the planning, now it's the economic development committee or whatever.
And I know someone else had a topic about offers of dedication. I'm sorry, did you have a comment?
No, I had a comment to do a follow up on what Jim said. Okay. We do track easements like conservation easements or scenic easements, because they may have a definite impact on the value, the valuation of that property. If the landowner is restricted on what they could do on this portion of the property, it could have an impact on.
And that would go to the exclusive easements where the SB is involved or whatever. But if it's with a private individual to another private individual, we just.
That's new in El Dorado coming too. Just recently, or just coming up, we have a subdivision that's coming up, and they're marking out the conservation easement, and it's going to an easement management, a third party. And by that, we question whether, what is the value on that? Because clearly, there's something important to the developer that they're sending this out. So we were questioning whether or not we need to mark those parcels. It's not just some kind of common area, but some sort of managed conservation easement. Does anyone else have a problem like that? Because I'm curious as to what you've done with subdivisions that come through.
Through our town, we have a deer migration thing there. So we have this beautiful land, and it's like, you literally, no one told you about it, but it's a deer migration, and it's actually cut off. There's no building on it. There's nothing on it. And, you know, people buy it. We have several parcels that involve that. We don't track it.
That sounds like an easement.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, that is one of those things that I think we should look into, because, you know, like you're saying, someone's buying 6 acres and they can only build on, you know, a quarter of it because it's all deer migration. Mm-hmm. So, but they own it, but they can't, it's an easement.
Yeah. And I know the developers make a big deal about it. Mm-hmm.
I think it all kind of comes down to value and how much interest the public has in respect. Well, the conservation easements really came basically as an offshoot of the ag preserve kind of stuff. And they said, well, you know, it's even more restrictive than ag preserve, so therefore, it's something we really think is important to have. Our county says, okay, if we have a flood control channel that is cemented and has fences, we think that there's no other use for it, absolutely. And we kind of say, we show that on the map so that so it's really plain and evident. But by and large, there are numbers of other restrictions on properties for different things. Yeah, there's view easements, there's just a ton of different restrictions for properties that we can't show a map or note on maps or anything else. It's just like the appraisers have to take care of it. And I think that's and every county has really done that. You know, BOE says a public road's the only thing we need to really show. And showing acres. And I think that we have some conservation issues kind of it. But I think every county has to, okay, sort of like this deer, like your deer thing, it's like, well, that has such an impact, I don't know what the county has it, but they're gonna show them. I think that same sort of thing applied to the county. They think that has such an impact on the property that it needs to show on the assessor map. I think it's kind of an individual decision.
My favorite easement is a golf ball flight easement.
Golf ball flight easement.
Right. That's my favorite.
Never come across that one. Exactly. All right. So. I guess that opens us up to our next presentation. Wayne, talk about easements.
Nice segue.
Okay, easements. It was a difficult subject to kind of figure out where people are. It seemed to be a big interest in it for everyone. I have no idea where to start in it. So I guess I'll start from the beginning. I think the assessor yesterday talking about the value of mappers, and I think that the value of mappers is one of the things that you know a little bit about every department to be really functional, and which is not really the case of the other departments who know almost nothing about mapping. So, and one of the other things about it is I think it, as a general rule, people come to our counter asking a lot of questions, and it starts with the assessor parcel map, in the sense that they come to us because a lot of times they have gone to planning, and for all those who haven't come to this realization, is when you go to planning, people say, gee, I really need to know what I can do. Can you please give me some advice? Well, as soon as planning gives somebody advice and they don't understand it or whatever, do something different, and then they go back and tell planning and says, I did what you said, now you're telling me it's not right. So planning and the surveyor office, really in the same respect, of say, basically they're going, no, we don't give advice. You know, you turn in your plans, and we'll okay them or not okay them. And that's really become their function, and they are not in the advice business at all. And of course, that's really what everybody wants from them. And so eventually they say, well, why don't you go to the assessor? And it was almost supposed to be the assessor's job then to say, if the assessor doesn't have that knowledge, they just say, you know, well, they sent you here because they were tired of telling you that they weren't going to give you any advice, and you're not going to get any advice. I took it, the assessor, as long as you just say, listen, I'll give you as much advice as I can, you just realize you're getting it from the assessor, not the planning department. And and I think that that is kind of the sort of that same extension of what mapping function sort of ends up as. Go ahead, Tim.
And then our favorite line is, well, I don't know why somebody at planning would have sent you here.
And my knowledge is that's why they sent it, is that the people just can't walk away not getting any advice. And so when the planner says, well, why don't you go to the assessor's office, you know, they're more than willing to grab that as a last ditch avenue for help. And my feeling always is the more you end up knowing, the more entertaining it is, because you now know, if you know enough, you know really what these people are talking about, you know when they don't know what they're talking about. It becomes sort of a source of entertainment for you, besides just mapping. Bottom line is that I'm encouraging everyone to get as much varied information and knowledge as they possibly can, because it helps in our value to the assessor's office, to ourselves, and the county, and all that kind of stuff. Easements. Okay, who can tell me what an easement is? Yes.
My understanding is it's always an agreement between private individuals.
To do for what purpose?
To use some land.
That is, and which is not theirs.
Right.
And first concept we get in real estate services. When you buy property, you don't get to go to that property and pick it up and take it home and keep it. It's there, so you don't get to do that. So it's considered really, it's like a bundle of rights. The term that is thrown out there is what you're buying is a bundle of rights. And you can have the whole bundle of rights, which include the right to use it, the right to keep somebody else from using it, and those are really in essence the sort of the main thing. It says I can do whatever I want here, and I can keep anybody else from doing anything on it. But then all of a sudden you find out that that's really not the case. That somebody else has already had their hand in it on that property before you bought it. Government has put a hand on it and says, we zoned it, you can only do these certain things with it. Somebody's already taken out a mortgage on it, and they didn't pay it, it wasn't paid off, you're going to have to assume it. So somebody gave some of those rights to the lender to be able to foreclose on your property. And the same thing with easement says, okay, it's some of that bundle of rights that you're now, for your property that you're now handing over to somebody else. And, sure. So much for pushing that. They came up and sort of said, well, we have types of easements. And my first page is, first two pages, we won't go through and read because they're sort of a summary of what we're going to do. We'll start off. What Tony is equitable servitude. Talking about real property, one of the things that quickly changes you from one area to the next area is looking at easements in real estate in terms of how it's been how the law was there. Whether it was things that definitely started with some sort of legislature, or as most stuff in real estate, it's developed through the courts. And the courts have had to just try to do, really be the one who defines what rights people have and what rights were taken away, and they're going to describe whether those the rights you were denied or taken away from you are fair and were fair. They make a judgment, becomes law, and an easement is that right that someone has given up to another person, and it has to be understandable so that it's enforceable, and that kind of stuff. Positive negative. Most easements are a positive easement saying, I'm giving you this so you can do this over my land. An easement can also really be, I'm telling you, there's things that you can't, I'm giving you some right, but I may also pull back some restrictions. Almost nobody ever talks about a negative easement, but if you're going to have a positive easement, you got to have a negative easement as well. So then it falls. Then the next part of it is in your handout. There's a little diagram that shows. So what's dominant tenement? The Serbian tenement. Well, first off, tenement is an estate. So it's not a person. It's an entity other than sort of a person. Just tenement comes from the idea of a tenant, but in reality, as you think of it, is like he has a dominant estate in this, or he's the servant, or it is a servant estate, because that is the category of the property. Easement either benefiting a property, and so the property that is being benefited is a dominant tenement, and the one where the easement is over, such as in this example, the road, is the servant tenement. There's the diagram that I just showed you, or asked you to look at. Easements and gross and appurtenant easements. Easements and gross is an easement to a particular person. You're saying, okay, George, you can walk across my property to get over to the beach, but nobody else can, just you. This isn't for everybody. I'm giving it to you. When you die, nobody gets to go across my property. Pertinent easement basically says this easement's going to go with the land, meaning then, such as the driveway easement, the property who needs that easement to get across is getting the easement and is permanent. If he never ends up using it, doesn't matter, it still goes, he sells the property, that it goes with the property in the sale. One of the things I always read, if it's not listed in the deed as a separate item in the exhibit, it still goes with the property. There's an interesting sidelight of where title company things come in, is that just the opposite is can be the same case. Is there may be an easement that shows in the legal description, shows an easement going across somebody's property. That doesn't automatically mean that that's a valid easement. If you were going to rely on it, you were really going to have to go back and find out, was that easement really given by the right person, to the right person, that sort of thing. And
So title companies are doing the same thing. If they show it in their policy and they put it in their description in the title policy, that means they're insuring it. And they say they've done all that work and are saying, yes, that property has the right for that easement. The title company, goes through an extra effort to ensure that that easement belongs to that person as well. So it's by the fact that it's in the deed isn't something that you could completely rely on. I think this is really just slides saying it's a prelude to talking about, we talked about easements and growth, we talked about pertinent easements, and maybe we'll now talk about types of easements and growths. I went over some of the stuff that attached to the land. You can, this is basically some of the wording in law that that describes easement and growth. In one of these at the bottom, I had a question. Hopefully nobody read that answer before. utility companies are, what kind of easement is a utility company getting? Are they getting easement and growth, or are they getting impertinent? That's a question. Quick, let me give you a hand. A couple. Throw out an answer.
Gross.
Okay. yes, it's in gross. The utility company doesn't have a property next door that they need to get an easement across your land. They are basically, as if they were the owner, getting an easement across your property. So it's an easement in gross. It's just basically, it's a company getting an easement across your property rather than a person. And what makes it? And since the company doesn't die, in that respect, that it becomes sort of a permanent easement. But that's only because if the entity does die for some reason, it goes away. And the utility company was to completely disappear. The easement would die because it doesn't, the city sewers can't come in and use that easement now. So the sewer company can't come in and use it. It was only for the gas and residential there or something. So, so there's the answer to that question. talking about pertinent easements, I think we ran most of this. They always transfer the land unless the actual easement holder gives it away. In other words, like I just said before, it doesn't die from non-use. Negative easements, creations of easements, usually contractual. We had kind of an example of landlocked property. Can a property be landlocked? Who believes that there's property out there that's landlocked?
Oh yeah,
but in reality, it's not landlocked. That person, a property, always has the right to is given the right toward acquired easement from the property it came from. There's another little example there showing second example. The catch of it is it can only, its right is only from the property that it broke away from. And, we had a we had the same similar situation that county road, their property was 100 yards from this county road, but their property never came from the property that owned that 100 yards. And they had no right to go across that 100 yards to get to the county road. They did have the right to drive 5 miles through the property that the property came from to get there. But of course, putting in 5 miles of pavement to get to the house was much different than the 100 yards to go across the property. But there's no way they were going to be able to get that if they went to court. There's no precedent for the court saying, okay, we're going to take that land from that person and give you an easement across it just because it's much easier for you. You have to get put the other way. And then one of those examples is sort of like a section of land. So the law says that every section of land has a easement of some width going along every section line. So for all of us who have sections up here in the mountains, and you go, well, you know, we now put a road up through straight up this, along that section line. Well, that's impossible to do in these mountain situations. So it's like, well, that you still, just like an easement that I just described earlier, you still have a right to go across it. What you have to do is what they call, you have to have it. You have to perfect your right. Perfecting your right is then going to that owner and say, gee, I need to get, you know, I have a right to go across your property, get to mine, and I can't do it that way because it's physically impossible. Could you write me out an easement to go up through the your driveway and up past your barn and up the way? And the owner says no. So your right then becomes to take that person to court. And the judge then will say, yes, he has a right to get to his property, and he has a right to go through your property, and if you're not going to write an easement, then the court will write an easement that he can use, and there'll be a judgment, and that will become an easement that's now set in stone, and that's the easement that can be put in the legal description, and that kind of thing. So in essence, every property has, there is a way to get to that property. That right to get there has to be perfected. And which requires then perfecting it costs a bunch of money. You can get there some way or another. I suppose if somebody might have an example where there's, you know, 1,000-foot cliffs on that property. And my comment would be, it's like, well, you can still get there. You know, it's just going to be tough, you know, for you to have to build stairs 1,000 feet and hoist your car up there. But you can still get a right to have a ladder and a hoist for your car to get it up to that property if that is what you're willing to fight for. Seven ways to create an easement, 8 ways to create an easement, 5 ways, there's a few articles out there, 5 ways to create an easement. So some of them is sort of like, is it an easement or is it not an easement? One of the ones I just didn't throw in that they talked about in just before you get started with this as an example would be what's a blanket easement? Who can tell me what a blanket easement is?
Blanket easement is
Okay.
Blank easement is any easement that has no description or defining limitation to where it is located.
Exactly. So they can draw, so they have an easement to put their utility line or their road, because one person would say anywhere, or somebody else would say at least somewhere on your property. And once they do, so the utility says, okay, utility company has a right to put it across there. But once they put in their line, they don't get to put in the second. You know, if they've used up their easement right now to put their one line through there. You know, they can't put a line every 10 feet, so now you can't build it. And you certainly have the right for discussions about, say, I'm going to have my house right here, you know, if you have your utilities, at least go along the back 5 feet. It's one of those things where it's sort of like nobody knows ahead of time when they're acquiring that easement, they have no idea where those lines are going to have to come from one property over here to the next property. So they end up getting a blank. So back to my list. An express easement. An express easement is basically by a deed where it says, okay, I am deeding you 20 feet on the side of my property for you to have access. And we're going to do it in the form of deed. You can record it, and it's an express. I give it to you. A reservation of an easement is basically the same thing, where a person says, you know what, I'm going to sell a property, but I'm going to reserve an easement over the property I'm selling so that I have that 20-foot easement to go across to get to that, to get to the road, the county road. But again, it's really an express reservation. Say, I'm selling you this, but I'm keeping that right. Dedication, we're talking about dedication. Dedications are on map. If somebody makes a document that they call a reservation, the term you were just using, if it's in a document, it's some way or another, it's really an express easement. Only on a map is it dedicated. And hopefully, so on the map, it's up in that corner, landowners, you know, saying, okay, I'm agreeing that I'm going to dedicate all the roads that are shown on my map. And of course, then we all know that any county or any agency, nothing that you give them has any validity until they accept it. It's sort of the same thing in it's just a stated thing of sort of understanding of law, is that, you know, you may deed something to somebody who's like, you know, I'm tired of paying taxes on this. I'm going to deed it to my neighbor. You know, it's useless land, but I'll deed it to him. He can pay the taxes. Yet by the guy not accepting, you know, even though it may have been recorded, it didn't get accepted. The guy didn't agree to it. It didn't get accepted. And so it just not a valid transfer. Same thing with offer on the map. The county doesn't accept it, then it's not a valid transfer. They haven't handed it, as in the law service says, they haven't handed it to that next person. Jim, did you okay?
Never mind, you covered it.
By condemnation. A lovely one, right? Right of way is what right of way agents do as part of their job. They want to put in the county road. They want to widen the county road. They go to the owner and they say, listen, we need 10 feet of your front yard to put up the county road. Come on, guy's going, man, I have like 10 feet of my road. And they said, okay, well, then we're going to have to acquire it through condemnation. Basically, any government agency has this police
power to use to acquire property. So the cemetery district, you know, the other obscure government agencies that you wouldn't possibly think have the right to take people's property. Surprisingly, they do. A new one is cities, counties, kind of turning over those rights to developers and giving kind of the developers, in essence, making them an agent and saying they can't almost basically acquire by condemnation because that city has given them that right. So they can sort of get everything started and really follow through on giving land for their mall. So condemnation, one of the things that people don't understand about condemnations, one of the first things they have to do to get started is have a public hearing where they say, we intend to acquire this property. Is there anybody that disagrees with that? And people disagree with it. And then they say, well, no, I'm sorry. I'm glad I heard all those arguments. We're taking it anyway. And at that moment, they have taken the property. And they can now move their trucks onto the property. Well, I'm sorry. The one thing that they have to do is whatever that agency thought the property was worth, they have to put it in an escrow account and say, okay, anytime you want to decide everything's okay, you can take money out of that escrow account and we're all good. And otherwise, then they can start moving their trucks on it and everything's done. And you said, no, you know, I'm taking you to court. You know, you can't do this. Whenever you go to court, only thing that the judge is going to be talking about is whether they gave you enough money to take that property. They've already taken the property. You no longer have any rights in that 10 feet. You only have a right to complain to the judge that they didn't give you enough money, which is always the case for government, because the government sort of has that concept of like, okay, you've got 1,000, you have 10,000 square feet here, you need 1,000 square feet, so we're giving you a tenth of what your land is worth. Of course, what they're taking is your full front yard. and you're going to go and say, well, and the government always says, listen, we're paying you 10% of what it's worth, we're taking 10% of what it's worth, it's everything's fair. And you go in and say, well, wait a minute, you're taking 20 feet of my front yard and the road, and you know, now I step out my door and there's trucks running by. And then you're going to convince the judge that you need more money for them. Eventually it could be like, I need enough money to move my house back another 20 feet. You know, that's the kind of arguments that you end up with. An example I ran through is the concept of there was this nice house, this 1 acre, where all the houses viewed nice. So, and it was just out of LA, sort of like you drive home an hour. And then you have this nice little 1 mile tree line drive that goes up into your subdivision, you know. And the county says, well, no, we're going to allow a couple other subdivisions in, so we're going to make this four lane street that goes through there. And we don't see any value in this nice little two lane windy road going through this by this creek has any particular value. And now you have to go and argue why there was value when you purchased your property. You paid more for it because you got to enjoy that little windy road. So anyway, got off the set. By necessity. An easement by necessity. Again,
it kind of follows in the same aspect we were talking about of you have a right to, by necessity, to be able to not have a landlocked property, and you can go through the property next door. It is specifically determined by law that, that necessity doesn't allow you to go through that 100-yard property of the other neighbor. You would want to argue that it's necessary for you to, you know, have 100 yards to go to get to County Road rather than 5 miles. The courts was just going to say, forget it. Your only right is, by necessity, you're limited to going through the property for which you're probably conferences at all. So, prescription. Lovely one. Prescription basically says if you use this property for a certain amount of time, and we have another slide that kind of follows through. If you you have under certain circumstances, you have acquired an easement now that they can't take away, that you could now use a property. For example, you walk across somebody's property to get to the beach. And you've been doing it for a number of years. In California, it's 5 years. In Texas, it's 30. You have to do it for 30 years in Texas to be able to get that same right. But in California, it's only 5 years. There has to be some other presumptions. One of them is that the owner actually knows you're doing it and doesn't do anything about it. If the owner puts up a fence, blocks it off to keep you from doing it, within the 5 years, then he stopped you. The law has made it specific about terms of signs. If you have a sign of a certain size with a certain wording, that will be sufficient to keep someone from crossing your land. And that's enough as a deter. You don't have to put up a 10-foot fence. You can just have to post those signs. And so that's probably the main concept of a prescription easement in terms of how it's done. But the other main thing that you can always do if there's somebody crossing your land, the fences were moved, you find out about it. If you hand that person a letter and says, okay, I'm now giving you the right to have the fact that your fence is on personal property, or the fact that you're walking across my property and it's now been 4 years and 6 months, I'm now handing you a letter that says you have permission to do it. And as soon as you hand them that letter, all that easement stuff, the possibility of getting a full easement that you own, disappears because they now know of it, and they are giving you an easement, or they're giving you a right to do that. They're giving you a license to do that. It's not an easement, but giving you a license now to go across the property. And it can, and a license, you can take it. They don't have to give it back to you. You can actually take it back if it's a license in that case. And then their 5 year starts over.
Does it start over for an owner? Like, say this place has been gone and it's going to sell a year before the five, does it start over?
No. In that case, it's sort of considered that. If you are buying property, you want to make sure you know whether there's anybody that's been walking across that property. You want to drive, you want to look to see if there's, so whether there's little paths that go across, and oh look, there's a path that goes through here to the beach. You need to know that. It doesn't start over with each owner.
So that prescription easement becomes an appurtenant easement?
Yes. Or it becomes an easement in gross, because that person has, or that right to use it. or if there's been five people, those five people are still have that right. It's not an appurtenance would say to the, because the appurtenance means then the property next door right. would always have the right to rule across. And they can't, they can't ever acquire an appurtenance. They can only acquire a decent increase. So, yes?
I have some neighbors that they bought from a person that had owned for 40 years. The driver went over a 15-foot triangle. Only a, you know, so only one wheel would go over the neighbor's property. So 40 years, she bought it. The neighbor allowed her to go over it for 7 years. Someone else bought it. And the judge took her easement away and made them make a new driveway for that 15-foot triangle. No, wait, no, that's not what I learned. That's not what I've been telling people for the past 20 years. It was, and then the judge also said, because she owns, her easement goes to the fifth, to the middle of your 20-foot road, you have to ride your horse, not drive your car, but ride your horse on the opposite side of the road so you don't go over her property. It was, this judge has little issues about things, but I was shocked.
judges can do
that. It is amazing. You only have to know a few judges to understand the concept. This concept that judges are gods. Yeah, in their eyes, and so whatever they say, whether it's by law, by whether they're really following the law or not, is. And they're saying this is the most fair and equitable thing, and I'm going to rule on it, even if past rulings have been a little different. You get to spend a whole bunch more money to appeal that decision from that judge when that sort of thing happens. So it's sort of like everything we talk about is sort of what the rational concepts that have been passed down. That it isn't the really obscure one that didn't make any sense from some judge that was totally senile. You know, that's sort of like they take those, try to take those out of the equation and say, you know, okay, this is what's supposed to happen. But in reality, the judge can say, do or say anything. And like I said, what you get to do is appeal it. Then it finally goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court now decides, you know, what's right and wrong, and you know, is a baby at conception or not, you know, and the judge, you have the Supreme Court of the United States making that judgment. You know, does he have the right to make that judgment? Who knows? We have sort of given them that right to make those kinds of decisions because they're the highest court that we can go to. So they get to make those final decisions. They can't appeal. So where were we? I think it switched on me automatically. We're back on basically easements by dedication. Let me go back. Prescription. The seventh one throwing in there is permission, which is a license, not an easement, because it can be taken back by you. Estoppel. Estoppel is then an easement where someone says, listen, okay, I'm giving you a right to go across my land. So you can go ahead and you can now go ahead and buy that property and build a house and all this kind of stuff. But nothing got recorded. And then you made the mistake of not getting it recorded, and that person now you built your house, your driveway across, and he says, I never said you could do that. Show me in writing where I said that there is anything about me telling you that. And that's where then the law starts to come in, and they've sort of it made it sort of permanent, saying if somebody goes out to actually this lie and deceive you, you're now kind of in a special category when it comes to going in front of the judge to perfect your reason. If the judge says the guy has really lied to you, then they make it much easier for you to acquire. But you still ended up going through court. But it's the reason by estoppel. Estoppel meaning hidden. It was hidden on you. His true intent was never to give you an easement. But he wanted to sell you the property, but not give you those rights you thought you were going to get. Easement terminations. The concept that we talked about is an easement has to be terminated sort of the same way it was acquired. If it was acquired on a map, it can disappear on a map. If it was acquired by a deed, there has to be a quitclaim deed back to get rid of it. Right-of-way law. I guess we're not going to be going into road easements. The slides that I'm just looking through is sort of like, okay, if you want to know more about these easements, the presentation will be available. Easements, airspace easements for jets to make as much noise as they want over the airspace that you own. Conservation easements, action to quiet title, quieting title is just sort of that step beyond a prescription of easements where there's all the rules about where you can acquire the actual fee interest in somebody's property if you follow all these rules, and paying taxes being one of them. So everybody, that's a question that comes up at the counter. Quieting title to property and paying taxes on it being one of the concepts is where you, is a concept that's going to come up at the counter all the time. So I think that's it. I have 30 seconds for questions. We didn't. Nobody's answered. Sorry, we didn't. I had hoped we'd cover. Maybe start covering some stuff on road easements, ownership of road easements. Did a county or city acquire this property in fee so that if they abandon it, they actually own it and can sell off it or pieces, or is it an easement? Law says, first law really said, yes, everything, whether it's, if it wasn't clear, it was an easement. Then a law came along and said, no, that's not right. Hey, if it wasn't clear, they made a new law. So if it's not clear, it's in fee. Our county legal department kind of went by the fact that they said, okay, the last one really was that they did it in fee. The title company basically say that it's stupid, doesn't make any sense. What county or city should be getting the property? We're going back to the original concept where they're willing to usually insure property based on the fact that it was acquired by easement of the land that goes to either property, split down the middle, or there's a mark, or it's a marginal easement and property. But you don't get go into where all the property went to one side because it came out of that tract
not the track next door. Okay.
Thanks, Wayne. And like that, he's going to have that available. We'll post it to the website. We made a mistake. We did not officially elect our vice president for San Bernardino for 2017. So I don't know if we want to do that real quick or should we. I think we'll do it after break. We'll do that after break. So let's let Frank get up here and talk about our GIS parcel management.